I once encountered a crystal clear example of this concept of payoffs with a newly married couple. Apparently, Connie was insanely jealous of Bill and lived with a horrible and gripping fear that he would violate their marriage vow. She felt that he would either leave her or have an affair during his frequent job-related travels. Connie would call and page him incessantly throughout the day to verify his whereabouts and his activities. In one day, she had called or paged him 17 different times. Each contact was the same. Are you with any other women? Have you flirted with anyone? Do you think they're prettier than I am? Do you wish you were with them instead of me? You don't love me, do you? You think I'm ugly and boring and uninteresting, don't you? Bill consistently and patiently reaffirmed his love and commitment to her. He denied the presence of other women, even if they were involved with him in work-related ways. He constantly reassured her in terms of his commitment, fidelity, and appreciation for her and her attractiveness. This pattern continued on until both were so addictively involved in it that it was destroying their marriage. She could think of nothing else, and he had become a slave to the phone, beepers, and constant reassurances. Both professed a desire to stop it. My question was, if you don't like it, why don't you quit doing it? You're not stupid people. You have the ability to make a choice, so make it and quit whining about it. Both said they wished that it was that easy, but that try as they might and commit as they would, they constantly returned to the pattern. They both expressed frustration and confusion over why they would consciously do what they didn't want to do. The answer is probably as obvious to you now as it was to me then. Both Connie and Bill were getting some kind of sick payoff out of this destructive interactive pattern. As the interactions wore on, it became apparent that Connie was terribly insecure personally. Duh. But the real revelation to her was that she was feeding on the constant reassurance, placated each time he passed the test. She was getting an ill-gotten gain of reassurance and recommitment every single day. She became so addicted to the need for this that it controlled her. Bill, who seems like the poor victim in this whole thing, undoubtedly got a sick ego trip from being so valued, pursued, and worried about. It stroked his ego that his wife was so obsessed with him. But soon, like all addictive behaviors, both Connie and Bill became slaves to their addictive payoffs. She was going to have to make a decision about whether she wanted to nurse this sick, green-eyed, narcissistic, and self-destructive monster that dominated her every waking hour, or grow up and take the risk of letting herself love and trust. It was also clear to me that if she didn't, Bill would be out of there and out of there soon. Bill had to decide whether to be controlled by the ego trip or mature into a more healthy partnership. Instead of waiting for your partner to change, you can and will serve yourself much better by looking at yourself instead of your partner. What kind of payoffs are you affording yourself that are keeping your self-destructive patterns alive? You may find that it is now obvious or that it is still hidden. Either way, make no mistake, there is a payoff there. You are no exception to the rule because there are no exceptions to the rule. So you can either stay self-centered and keep blaming your partner, or you can make the choice to be self-directed and start working for real change. You can either fill yourself up with an impotent anger at your partner, or you can choose to get busy and stimulate your relationship to get headed into the right direction. But never think that you can control your partner. And never think that it's up to your partner to make your life better. You are in charge of yourself. Believing in myths is not the only way you poison your relationship. There's an even more insidious technique that you use to harm the very thing that's most important to you. That's when you approach your relationship with what I call your bad spirit. Every one of us has a bad spirit, an irrational and destructive emotional side to our personalities. There is a part of each of us that is immature, selfish, controlling, and power-seeking. If you are being honest with yourself, about yourself, you know, of course, exactly what I am talking about. Unfortunately, it's during relationship interactions, the most emotionally charged part of your life, the place where you have the greatest personal stake, when your bad spirit can leap out of you. There can be astonishing hostility and cruelty, childlike defensiveness, pathetically immature reasoning, accusations and counter-accusations, blaming and shaming, exaggerations and denials. When your bad spirit comes roaring out, you are the most disconnected from your core of consciousness as you can get. Most of you find this side of yourselves so distasteful that you cannot and will not face it. You have a stockpile of denials to justify and explain away your terrible behavior. You like to think instead of how you are when things are going well in your relationship, and you act mature, giving, flexible, and democratic. But your bad spirit is always there, always lurking, and it's when the water gets rough, when you get frustrated, threatened, and hurt, that you give in to your dark side. Allowing this ugly side of who you are to take control can and will cause your relationship to fail. Not some of the time, but all of the time. Regardless of what else might be right with a relationship, your bad spirit, if left unattended, will poison every fiber of your relationship and seal its fate. Because this aspect of yourself can be so devastating, you can't afford to be defensive about it or pretend that it doesn't exist in hopes that it will go away. Nor can you rely on traditional, conventional therapy in which you spend session after session with someone trying to understand where these attitudes come from, doing some analysis, perhaps, of what your mother or father did to you. Well, that can be entertaining mental masturbation, but it is little else. I can't change whatever happened to you as a child that may have influenced the way you are now behaving, and you can't change it either. The most important thing to realize is that you are not a child anymore. You are now an adult, and you have the chance to choose what you think, feel, and do. If you have a tough history, I'm sorry. I really am. I don't mean to make light of or minimize suffering that you may have been through. I've heard stories that were so horrible that they make me physically sick to my stomach. If you are one of those stories, I absolutely hate that for you. But there's only one thing worse than having terrible things happen to you in one phase of your life, and that is to mentally and emotionally carry those terrible events and feelings into the next phase of your life. If you are one of those who tragically suffered through such an event, you cannot hide behind it. You cannot use it as an excuse to justify this dark side. You'll just keep the suffering alive by transplanting it into your current life. Going through the next section of this audiobook will not be fun, because we are going to look at the most typical ways that this bad spirit shows up in a life and shows up in a relationship. But remember, you cannot change what you do not acknowledge. Have the courage to get real about this dark side, and you can take control.